This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy six Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1 liter flavors and get the seventh free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy six and get the seventh free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
This bracket season, FanDuel is letting you make the call. Because right now, new customers can get $200 in bonus bets when your first $5 bet wins. That's 200 extra bucks to bet on everything from clutch shots to last second heartbreaks and even who's cutting down the nets. If you've been waiting to join, there's no better time. There's tourney action almost every day, and FanDuel has amazing bet types like spreads, totals, game props, and so much more. So visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan and get in on the college hoops action all tourney long.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
It's a perfect time to go out to the Window Nation fan guest hotline and talk to our friend Jonas Schaefer from the Baltimore Banner, because the Ravens have done some stuff in the last week. And Jonas, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. And let's start with the new backup quarterback. What did you think of the Cooper Rush signing?
My mind, being what it was, immediately went to the easy joke of how a couple weeks ago Ravens fans were clamoring for Cooper Kupp, so of course they settled for Cooper Rush. But I think they did the right thing here. I mean, obviously, you know, they are more mindful of the salary cap considerations and the comp pick considerations than perhaps any team. So for them to get, you know, a adequate, suitable QB2 for a price that, according to the experts who know this stuff, probably won't cost them, you know, the late round comp pick that they're hoarding for 2026, it seems like good business. You know, obviously, it's tough to kind of imagine what a guy who was playing in a, you know, different ecosystem there in Dallas, with the, you know, offensive line not being what it once was and the offensive weapons definitely not being what it once was, you know, how he was able to manage and be a decent quarterback for the Cowboys there. Seems like he should be an upgrade over Josh Johnson, who, you know, whenever he went in for the Ravens, honestly, last year it seemed like it was almost destined to be a 3-and-out or a 4-and-out. So, I'm interested to see what he can be in training camp. I'm interested to see if Devin Leary is, you know, kind of cooked in his chances of making the roster at this point. But it definitely adds a little bit of intrigue to that quarterback room.
We got a kick out of what DeAndre Hopkins kind of had to say about the film study that he did of the Ravens prior to the signing, and how, you know, these receivers who he's never even played a down with or practiced with, you know, could help the quarterback out a little more. I honestly like it, because it's a perspective that nobody else in that room would have been able to provide or really speak to. And I found it interesting that he was willing to be so candid before he really even met these guys. What did you think?
Are you talking about just him kind of scouting them out via YouTube or what?
Yeah. Did you see the, well, he did an interview, I guess it was with the Ravens podcast.
Yeah.
And where, you know, they asked him about, you know, signing here in the receiver room. And he was like, well, you know, they basically let Lamar down a little bit too much at times.
Yeah. I think it's a good receiver room, probably the best that Lamar has ever had. But I think there are definitely things that DeAndre Hopkins can do that you wouldn't want Zay Flowers or perhaps even Rashad Bateman to do. I think both those guys have their own strengths, their own weaknesses. But, you know, he's going to be the adult in the room when it comes to, you know, maybe some of those 50-50 balls, and certainly, you know, kind of setting the chemistry for that group. So it's going to be interesting to see just how those guys all mesh together. I think you know, obviously with the Mark Andrews situation, I don't know what DeAndre Hopkins' role is going to be in the slot, but I think that is always going to be the inevitable transition for some of these guys who are big, strong dudes, but maybe don't have that top end speed. Like, do you move them in size? Do you kind of have that power slot receiver? And maybe it doesn't matter because of how many, you know, kind of condensed splits the Ravens like to run, that all these guys are going to be relatively close to the huddle and into the center. But it's definitely going to be interesting to see, you know, just how all those guys fit, because I think they have enough overlapping skill sets, but not so much that you can't, like, find unique, specific roles for them that they can thrive with those.
Jonas, you mentioned Mark Andrews. He had that $4 million roster bonus go his way over the weekend. Does that mean he is definitively a Raven for the 2025 season for you?
I mean, I'm never going to say definitively with this team and just how many silly, gambling GMs there are in the NFL. I mean, obviously, the irony of this is that, of course, he is now more attractive to another team
sure.
in the NFL because that is no longer as much of an albatross, that contract. But if you're really getting rid of a guy who could be a potential game changer for you in the playoffs and only getting, you know, the $7 million or whatever it is in cap relief, doesn't really seem to be that smart of business. You know, Brian McFarland, who obviously does great stuff for Russell Street Report, said that basically how the Ravens were kind of structuring their contracts before Saturday and Sunday indicated to him that they had plans to keep Mark Andrews on the roster. So it seems like, you know, whatever the Ravens got in terms of the way of offers was not enough to force their hand and give up Mark. And now they're just going to have to deal with the privilege and the burden of having, like, the NFL's most talented tight end room and managing that with all the other weapons they have on offense.
We're talking with Jonas Schaefer. It's Inside Access here on The Fan. I do want to follow up on something you just said there, Jonas, and that's a playmaker in the playoffs, because, frankly, he hasn't been a playmaker in the playoffs, and injuries have played a factor in that. But he doesn't even have a postseason touchdown on his resume.
Yeah, obviously, I think if we got the chance to talk to him after that game, he would be the first to say that, you know, his standard is not being met. But I just think that, you know, if we were all willing to give Lamar, and I guess I shouldn't say we, because there are definitely some people who still aren't, you know, willing to give Lamar the grace in finding his feet, you know, finding his footing with this offense under Todd Monken, and basically saying, all right, what happened to you with Giro in the playoffs is immaterial. It's, you know, don't worry about it. What we're focused on is this new version of Lamar. And lo and behold, this new version of Lamar, even though there were still some, some stumbles along the way, was a lot better than the one that we saw in 2019 and 2020 in all these years. So I think if we can give Lamar that kind of grace and, you know, this transition period to say, hey, you know, with the sample size, it wasn't big, we'll give you more chances to prove that you have these potential Super Bowl bona fides. And I think we can, you know, give Mark the same kind of stuff. I mean, it's on a different game entirely when you get to the playoffs. Obviously, the designer game plans get a little bit more bespoke, but I just think that the guy that I see on tape getting open the regular season should be able to get open the playoffs. And, you know, if he's there on that Ravens, then I wouldn't expect him to kind of shrink from the moment, like I guess you could say he did in Buffalo.
So the Ravens going outside the sort of hardball cocoon, right, because Josh Johnson's been a hardball guy, one or the other, for a long time, and paying a little bit of money to a backup quarterback with some upside is not something that we might have seen them do in the past. Are anything else you're maybe bracing for? Anything you think they might do to spruce up this defense? If Jeffrey Simmons continues to sit out there another week from now, does something like that make sense? Does a Calais Campbell reunion make sense?
Yeah, I mean, my mind immediately went to Calais because he is, I think he would be a guy who would definitely be willing to take a little bit less than what he, you know, has proven time and time again he's worth out there on the open market, because he wants to win a Super Bowl. He knows the culture here. He knows the coaches here. Obviously, with, you know, it's not a like-for-like replacement with Michael Pierce retiring, but, you know, you can move him inside and play the one tech, play the three tech if need be. So that would be interesting. I think, you know, there are a lot of guys that the Ravens have been connected to over the years, or even at the trade deadline last year who are now still available as pass rushers, as edge rushers. Obviously, those guys tend to be a little bit more expensive than perhaps, you know, what Calais would cost. But, yeah, I mean, they're going to continue to monitor the market, you know, and I guess we'll just I don't know how big the next signing will be. I don't think it'll be huge because I think they are still mindful of, you know, the deals that have to get done with their guys who are in-house. You know, I think this is probably the most interesting part of the offseason after that first wave of free agency because you just kind of see how much the Ravens value these guys as well as, you know, the rest of the NFL.
Jonas, let's end with the Terps. What did you think of their draw in the NCAA tournament, and how far do you think they will go?
Well, they're going 5,000 miles, and then they have to stay there for 2 weeks, Bone, if they win.
Do we know, would they not even bother coming back to College Park if they...
I think, Jonas, they want you there 48 hours before your next game. So, like, I don't even know how you would, you know, like, how you would turn that around.
Yeah. I guess that would be tough. I'm hoping that they win because selfishly I would like to get out to San Francisco. I would be going to the Sweet 16 and I got some friends there, so that would be
nice. Cool.
I think they definitely got a pretty sweet draw. You know, this is the Grand Canyon team seems like on paper just kind of like a much worse version of Illinois, and that they take a lot of threes and don't really shoot all that well and give up a lot of turnovers, and that's what Maryland does pretty well. And then, you know, the 5-12 matchup, it seems like probably the least scary. You know, obviously Colorado State could kind of mess some stuff up because that's a really nice offense with Nika Medved, and I guess he's the front runner for Minnesota, but maybe that is the complication for them, like kind of hanging over their head the way that the Seton Hall to Maryland transition did for Kevin Willard when his team got blown up by TCU years ago. So, you know, obviously Florida is going to be the big bad guy standing at the end of that draw, but, you know, frankly, anything can happen, and I think probably that they have to feel pretty good about getting to the second weekend. And if they don't, then it's going to be another tough offseason, especially if he gets that very, very big contract extension.
Jonas, one more thing before I let you go. Anything stand out about Ronnie today? I know he did his presser with you guys over Zoom when our show started. Anything in particular stand out?
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was pretty honest and forthcoming and talkative. I mean, for the most part, I mean, not to go, you know, too far in the weeds, but, you know, he was a guy who early in the season didn't really want to do a whole lot of locker room talks because of all the NFLPA stuff. So for him to be, you know, as kind of eloquent and talkative as he was, talking about how he wanted to give the Ravens what he thought was, you know, a nice deal, but that was also commensurate with his talents, I thought, you know, kind of struck a nice chord with me. And, you know, it was just nice to see him optimistic about all the guys that they had going back and be honest about, you know, just how much the Bills loss is still hanging with him. And, you know, I think he's really taken on this leadership role. And I think Lamar is also taking on this leadership role. Like, it was kind of interesting to hear him talking about how much he's talking with Lamar, because I keep coming back to even last year, like, we asked Derrick Henry a couple times, have you talked with Lamar during those first interview availabilities? And he said that they hadn't. So the fact that this is a more talkative, more sociable Lamar, I don't know if it indicates that he's turned a new leaf in any way, but it definitely was, it did kind of, you know, land on my ears a little bit differently.
Jonas Schaefer, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time, and hopefully you're heading out to San Francisco in a week.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Coming up next, T-Bone Time, TMI with TIM. What you got?
Yeah, we're going to get into both your guys' number ones during the six-pack for the six biggest concerns for the Terps heading into the NCAA tournament. These late-game situations. Maryland 6-8 in games decided by 6 points or less. Their last four games, they lost at the buzzer. How concerned are we? How concerned are you? 410-583-1057. We'll get into it next on The Fan.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's T-Bone Time, TMI with TIM, and the floor is yours.
The Terps were on the cusp of a big comeback. They were trailing by 15 points in the second half, by 11 points, but I think with 8 minutes to go against Michigan on Saturday. Derek Queen got fouled with 5 seconds to go, hit both free throws, and then Trey Donaldson gets the inbounds pass and gets a layup. And it was unfortunately way too easy for the Wolverines, and the Terps got bounced from the Big Ten Conference tournament. And that was the Terps' eighth loss this year in a game decided by 6 points or less. And going back all four of these games, their most recent losses, and looking in the final 4 minutes where Michigan outscored them 11-9, final 4 minutes. We just talked about the Trey Donaldson play. Michigan State, where Maryland actually outscored Michigan State 7-6 in the final 4 minutes. But how much did we talk about the game-ending sequence of Jacoby Gillespie taking that shot too early, gives Michigan State the run out for a half-court heave. Ohio State, look, Bruce Thorne just banked one, and yep. Ronnie Rice actually played pretty good defense and was in pretty good position on that shot, but they were outscored 13-7 in the final 4 minutes. And then the Northwestern game, where they had less than a second in overtime, Martinelli got a great catch and shoot and was pretty uncontested there. It was pretty poorly defended, but this has been a theme for them, making those type of mistakes in crunch time situations. And they've picked up some wins. The Penn State one really jumps out to me, where Rodney Rice, after having a pretty tough game, hit that baseline jumper. Even the Michigan game, which it ended up being 6 points. Maryland should have won that game by more than that. But I don't know, guys. It's just, it's still a huge concern heading into the NCAA tournament, how this team handles it. They're not going to get blown out. We have not seen them lose a game by more than 6 points all season, but 6-8 in those instances isn't good enough.
No. It was my number one thing in my six pack. It was Gigi's number one thing in his six pack. They just don't seem super comfortable in those situations. They come up short offensively at times. They come up short schematically at times. They come up short defensively at times. Their basketball IQ, which is usually really high, and their interconnectivity, which is usually really high, and understanding assignments and understanding who's got who on a switch and who's got who off a ball screen, that stuff's been lacking in critical moments in close and late situations. And it's getting a little late to shed your skin and become something you haven't been. I don't know. I mean, it gives me pause. Even this first game, this is a 5-point game with 5 minutes to go. I'm going to be crapping my pants a little bit.
Sure, because you're facing a Grand Canyon team.
Nothing to lose.
Exactly. Nothing to lose. You're 10.5, 11-point
underdogs. Who's the crowd going to be with out in Seattle?
Everybody else's fans are going to be with Grand Canyon. That's the way it happens all the time.
Yep.
Because they want the Terps out of there.
Well, they love the underdog win.
And if they're there to root for another team, they know who I think everybody in America knows who the highest scoring five-man starting
unit is. The Crab Five?
Crab Five, Jason.
It's the first thing CBS said when they announced the bracket.
It's so befuddling to me, too, because I do want to bring up the end-of-game situation against Michigan Saturday. They didn't go for a heave down three, which they could have done. They could have just forced a three. You miss that, you foul, and the game might be over right away. They hit. Reese hits the layup. They foul the right dude. He misses the front end. Queen gets fouled. They take the lead, but then they totally lose the plot there with 5 seconds left and let a guy go the length of the court and get a layup.
That can't happen. It's one thing to give up a jump shot, but for him to go coast to coast, that cannot happen in that situation.
Something like that has happened in almost every situation.
All their losses.
So, yeah, that gives me pause. Now, look, if they're in a situation like that against Florida, I don't think you're going to hear me complain a whole lot about it.
You'll complain.
Well, no. I mean, if they play Florida till the last shot and it goes against them, that's the story of their season. Mm-hmm. And I think Florida's winning this tournament. So things happen. But there's something off when when it's a one possession game and there's a couple minutes to play, something's off with this group. It just is.
Terps on Friday take on Grand Canyon. Pregame coverage 3:30, tip 4:30 right here on 105.7 The Fan. And coming up next, chance to catch up with IA Hall of Famer, our friend Mark Viviano, get his thoughts on everything going on, what the Ravens have done, Orioles getting ready for opening day. Terps, we'll talk to Viv next here on The Fan. And it's our pleasure to bring back on the program, courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline, our friend Mark Viviano. And Viv, thanks as always for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Is this an obligation of being a Hall of Fame
yes.
member that you guys have to call me? Because I don't want you to feel compelled just because you were so kind to me when I was still an active reporter of sports. But I still take your calls, and I still listen to you guys regularly, and I appreciate the work you do.
Viv, we appreciate that, and as much as this show, it seems like it's incredibly formal and that we seem as if there are a lot of rules and regulations, I can assure you we make all this up as we go along. We are bound to reach out to no one who we do not want to hear from. You are once a Hall of Famer, always a Hall mm-hmm. of Famer, and your perspective is always warranted and welcomed in these parts.
Well, that means a lot, you know, and I still tune in for the opinions that you guys have, very well informed, and you guys have your finger on the pulse of things. And then there are those occasional fun things like Tim at a pottery class.
Yes.
Like things like that keep me coming back for more, fellas. So
please spread the gospel among your friends and the retired communities out there. Let them know we're a good listen, Viv. So these Terps, how have they captivated you? What do you think of the draw? Seattle and San Francisco seems like an interesting path for the committee to send them on. But just your thoughts.
Yeah, I am compelled to watch, and I got to tell you, and I don't mean to, you know, kind of cast a cloud over what college basketball now is, because I think all of us have, a certain draw to, especially the March Madness aspect of this, when you have 64 teams and, you know, some interesting odd matchups and a lot of hope. And, you know, the fact that in 2018, UMBC beat Virginia, who was a one seed, and UMBC was a 16, just kind of adds to the whole lore of what's possible. Maryland goes into this NCAA tournament as, I mean, the more I read and hear, it's like they're like the hot team.
Yeah.
Like I'm seeing a lot of Final Four Maryland. And it is interesting how they've come from, and every team kind of has to do this now. Every power basketball team in Division I is basically a roster science experiment of a bunch of new guys who in the course of 6 months have to figure out how to play together and be good. And to Kevin Willard's credit, he had some trouble at the start with how they played, and he figured out, I got five guys, if I just play them all the time, I can win games.
Yeah.
And he has. Now, the one part about watching college basketball now, and I went to Missouri, so like I'll watch Missouri. Missouri was a team that was 8-24 last year, and this year they're ranked and they're making a run in the SEC. Because they remade their roster, and they'll probably have to remake it next year mm-hmm. too. And so will Maryland, because these guys, and I do not harbor any ill will for what these players have gained for themselves. The average Division I basketball starter is pulling in about $175,000 a year. I don't know how that rates at Maryland, but these guys have a job now. It's not being a student athlete. There are some, you know, they're taking some online courses just to remain eligible. When's the last time you heard of any player being on the brink of academic ineligibility? You don't hear it anymore because these guys are employees. They represent and work for the school. And here's the thing that's that you have to just put aside if you just want to enjoy the games, and I do. But the fact is, Derek Quinn's going to go to the NBA next year, and he should, and he's going to get paid real well, and he's an excellent talent. God bless Julian Reese for hanging out for 5 years in College Park. But most of any guy who comes to play for you at this level of basketball, while you wear your alma mater proudly, when this season's over, they're looking for more money and more playing time, and they don't care who you are or whether you cheered for them or not. And I don't blame them. But I'm saying that's the prism by which you have to look at what's going on here. Okay, you don't have to, but I do. Call me cynical, but I appreciate the business that it is. And the NCAA will pull in more than $1.5 billion from this tournament. So there's a lot of money to be had. And the Division I basketball players are being paid the brunt of it. So is it a sour outlook that I look at that business side of it? I'm just a realist, and I understand that that's what it is. All that being said, Kevin Willard has put together five good players, and this could be a magic ride for them in March, or as we know, it could be over real fast and then start over again. Recruit more guys from other schools and see where it takes you. So I'll watch it. I'll enjoy it. I get it. But I kind of watch it from the big picture sometimes of, you know, it's NBA D League. It's developmental basketball, and that's fine. I get it. And maybe I'm old school. You know, I think of my old friend, Jason, I know you knew John Feinstein.
Yes.
And you know, I think when I think of John, who just passed away, for those who don't know, I think of, you know, Big Monday. I think of the Big East. I think of, you know, Bob Knight. I think of that era, and part of me being older, I guess, now that I've crossed the 60 threshold, I kind of have, you know, not that those were pristine days.
Right.
Not that there weren't things going on that were illicit, but it just kind of had more of a romance to it, if you will. Now it is business. It is not hiding the fact that it's business. The games are great and the players are awesome. I'm not taking anything away from that, but I do kind of look at the big picture part of it. And I hope Maryland does well, because like I say about any of our local sports, when they do well, people are happy. And when people are happy, life's better around here. So go Terps.
Viv, we're 10 days away from the Orioles opening their season in Toronto, and the starting pitching was a question mark prior to Grayson Rodriguez going down with the injury. He's going to play catch tomorrow, but not going to be ready for opening day.
I'm
going to
go play catch, too.
Andrew Kittredge.
I'm going to play wiffle ball after work tomorrow if you're scoring.
Andrew Kittredge, he's out for a couple of months, and we know that they're going to handle Felix Bautista with kid gloves early on the season. Where are you on the Orioles pitching?
Well, any preseason in baseball, which is spring training, similar to the preseason in the NFL, you know, I covered both for a long time. And again, me sounding like a cynic, the only news that ever comes out of any preseason for any of these high-level professional sports is somebody getting hurt. The rest of it is preparation for the games when they matter. And, you know, I don't get too much into, you know, production in spring training games, you know, because half the time you're facing minor leaguers and late innings and wins and losses don't matter. Not to say that some things don't bear watching, but injuries are the story. And the Orioles' loss of Grayson Rodriguez for however amount of time is alarming, given who the rest of their starting pitchers are and how much they were counting on him. It is the thing, injuries to pitchers especially, that keep general managers up at night. That is the thing that's the last thing you know. It's always possible, but it's the thing you never want to have to deal with, especially when you're talking about a top-line player like Grayson Rodriguez, or who is expected to be. And what is kind of the shame of this is that he has been sitting on pitching potential for a number of years now, unrealized potential because of repeated injury. And that's concerning for a guy of his build, especially. He's a big dude. He's a hard thrower and a big dude, and the injuries just keep on coming. Now, if it's any solace, that you could go camp to camp through all 30 teams and find any number of these, the Yankees included, who've lost their Gerrit Cole for the rest of the year. He's done for the year. So, you know, misery has company in that regard. But when you're the Orioles and you had some questions going in, you hate for those question marks to be as big as someone like Grayson Rodriguez. And if he's playing catch tomorrow, good. He's got a lot of catching up to do to have himself ready for a full season. And if he can pitch anything, I don't know that he's thrown over 100 innings in a professional career yet, has he?
Like 120 is his high.
Yeah, that's just not cutting it for a guy of his ability, size, and expectation. I wish him well, but that's alarming. It sounds like Gunnar Henderson's going to be okay. Again, things like that are the news stories that pop out. And as you mentioned, 10 days away from these games counting, it's such a long season. There are going to be more of these, and the best teams can weather it over the long haul of 6 months.
Viv, anything you want to promote before we let you go?
I'd like the listeners to know, mark your calendar for May the 19th. The Baltimore chapter of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes has its gala event in Timonium, and I'll be the keynote speaker there. There'll be some other speakers. It's a great organization that does great work for the young people in Baltimore City. And go to fcabaltimore.org for more information, and I hope to see some of your listeners there. It's a great cause and should be a fun night, May the 19th.
Viv, you're the best. Thank you.
Thanks,
as always,
Viv,
for your time.
Thank you, guys. Be well.
You too.
Coming up next, we recap what we heard last week. Dan O'Dowd, former GM, Leo Mazzoni, longtime pitching coach. Their thoughts on Grayson Rodriguez, some necessary roughness next here on The Fan.
Yeah. I've been really confused by the whole Rodriguez things, honestly, guys, for a while now. And, you know, I don't know, you know, why you'd introduce a new pitch when he really hadn't mastered the ones that he had. And when they were right, he was plenty good enough to win games. But there's just something doesn't add up here for me with this young man. And it's been that way for a while now. So I'm just not sure when you're building out a rotation, you know, you can really count on this guy to be your horse, maybe a solid contributor somewhere in your rotation, but certainly not the top of your rotation.
That's longtime Rockies GM now with MLB Network, Dan O'Dowd, who I'd say it's understatement that he's a little confused on how the Orioles were handling Grayson Rodriguez, who has now been shut down for 7 to 10 days, got a cortisone shot in the back of his elbow. He is due to have a catch tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, this whole season, I mean, we get sort of bogged down in the here and now and the micro level of what's he doing. Oh, he's going to play catch. Oh, it should only be 10 days after cortisone. He never got ramped up. He's coming off a truncated season where they had to shut him down several times, coming off a compromised season, coming off a season that got cut about 60% or, you know, only went about 60% in Norfolk, and he got hurt pitching in glorified exhibition games when he should have already been in the majors. So that's been the whole sort of sordid tale that Dan O'Dowd was alluding to. And it begs serious questions about how they're going to get him through this season already starting from behind. And I mean, he's never thrown 120. How many do you think he's throwing this year?
Who the heck knows?
He hasn't been built up at all.
No.
He wasn't even to the point where he was throwing three innings in spring training games.
No.
So, and are they going to be able to thread this needle? Are they going to be able to find the right calculus from a developmental standpoint, from a rest and rehab standpoint, from a medical standpoint, from a competitive balance need to win standpoint? Because remember, they went out and got a bunch of 3 and 4 starters, not someone who could actually do anything close to what Corbin Burns gave him. Like, I think it raises real questions about what they're going to get out of Grayson Rodriguez and Kyle Bradish combined this year.
Well, and I think when we're talking about Grayson Rodriguez moving forward, you have to have that caveat where, fair or unfair, you can't count on him to hit the post consistently. This is the third season now that's going to be compromised due to injury, where the lat, like you were saying, where he was about to get called up, he was on the IL two separate stints last year, and now more than likely he's going to start the year on the IL again this year. It's durability has been a serious concern for him, and that's another just bad look for this organization not going out and acquiring some upper top-tier pitching to mitigate this possibility.
By the way, durability isn't a concern with Grayson Rodriguez. It's a reality. He can't stay healthy. He has yet to do it any season at any level as a professional. It's like that's the reality. He doesn't stay healthy, and now before we even get started this year, he's hurt.
And again, 23 starts for 103 innings pitched, the most he ever was asked to work in the minors. You can look it up.
Mm-hmm.
In real time, I had major questions about that. Leo Mazzoni literally laughed and almost spit out.
We don't have time to play
Leo. If he had any beer in his mouth, he would have spit it out, or water or whatever, when I gave him those numbers. Like, look, some of this is just, it's unfortunate. Some of it's baseball gods.
Bad luck. Yeah.
But I think some of it is, if there was a lack of communication between Grayson and this team through parts of this, then that's something they're going to have to work on and get much better at. If they have put too much on his plate and he's not at age 25 able to advocate for himself, then maybe they better put some different buffers and protocols in place, because the way they're doing it with this kid, it's not working. And if you're going to have the audacity to come out in the midst of all this and trump him as your potential ace at a time when you've gone out and signed a 41-year-old and a 36-year-old who's never pitched in the majors as your pitching insurance, and while we all know Kyle Bradish, there's no timetable for that, you might be doing it wrong.
Coming up next, we head down to Florida. Orioles win their spring training baseball game. They defeat the Red Sox in Fort Myers 12-3. Jacob Calvin Meyer covers the O's for the Baltimore Sun. He joins us next.